You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 192. Today's show is all about the mysterious drink known as absinthe. The last show was all about the Dew Drop Inn. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through November 5th, 2023, you can check out their exhibit about the women's right to vote, titled Yet She Is Advancing, New Orleans Women and the Right to Vote. The 19th Amendment, of course, granted American women the right to vote in 1920, but Louisiana laws effectively disenfranchised black women. As many white women began going to the polls and increasing their political participation in segregation-era New Orleans, African-American women continued to fight for access to the ballot. The exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and the words of the New Orleans women who for nearly 100 years persisted in their struggle to obtain the right to vote. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz somehow makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Many members of our community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a home. She does a really great job of building community and helping you get connected with people in your new area. When you're ready to make the move to New Orleans, reach out to Liz. While you're looking for a home, you need to probably secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on our refi, and it was as smooth as could be. We went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing another home, and it was just as easy. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at golfbank.com. We will put links in the show notes to the specific site on the Gulf Coast website so you can contact Tommy directly. And finally, before we get to the main topic, I want to talk about our newest sponsor, All the Bitter. They make 100% alcohol-free bitters using organic ingredients. Winners of 20 awards from major spirit competitions, they can be used in both alcohol-based and alcohol-free concoctions. I've tried them in multiple drinks and on vanilla ice cream. They have four main bitters now with several experimental varieties on the way. The ones I have are the New Orleans, which is inspired by Peychaud's, as well as Orange, Lavender, and Aromatic, which is inspired by Angostura. Place your order at allthebitter.com and use code BB15 to get 15% off your order, or you can shop locally in New Orleans at the Dreamhouse Lounge. Now let's get on to today's topic, absinthe, the drink that probably has more intrigue surrounding it than any other alcoholic spirit. I'm joined by the author of the book, The Absinthe Frappé, Marielle Sanji. Welcome to the show, Marielle. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the book. We did another episode about Café Brulot.
Oh, yes.
That's, I think, part of the same series of books.
Yes, the book by Sue Strachan.
Yes.
Really, really good book.
And that was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I learned a ton reading your book about absinthe as well. So why don't you first, before we get into the book, tell us a little bit about you?
Well, I was born and raised in the New Orleans area. I was actually born and raised on the West Bank in Gretna. Love New Orleans. It's just such a unique, great place. I am a food and culture writer. I write about local food, dining, drinks, cocktails, things of that nature. And LSU Press approached me to write this book 2 years ago. Jenny Keegan at LSU Press approached me. I was not familiar with the series at all, the iconic New Orleans cocktail series, which also includes the Sazerac and at the time the Café Brulot, and has since added the Vieux Carré. And she sent me a list of New Orleans cocktails to choose from. They had the Raffignac, Pimm's Cup, just cocktails that are very unique to New Orleans, invented in New Orleans. And what stood out to me was the absinthe frappe. I was not familiar with the frappe itself, but I was familiar with absinthe. And I knew it had a very rich history. I do like it. I have liked absinthe since I've tasted it. Mm-hmm. I have a palate for it. So I thought that would be really good to do the research and learn about the history. And I feel absinthe has touched so much throughout history and just, you know, art and writing and things like that. And of course, it has a connection to New Orleans because of its French connection. So I thought that would be great. And it was a really fun book to research.
And your book dives into all those themes you just talked about. And while we won't hit them all here because I want people to read the book, I do want to touch on that. First of all, what is absinthe made from?
It's made from fennel, anise, and wormwood. The wormwood adds a bit of bitterness to it, but it's herbs, and the wormwood is what makes it green, and you can add other herbs to it to make it other colors. There is like hibiscus added to some absinthe that makes it red, but those are the three herbs, and it's distilled usually from brandy or wine or another liquor.
And it has a pretty high alcohol content, right?
Yes, yes. Well, the absinthe we get today is usually 68%.
Okay.
Between 65 and 70% alcohol, but you dilute it with ice water.
Right, right. And we'll get into that as mm-hmm. we talk about how to drink it. Jumping ahead just a little bit, who invented or where was the frappe part of it invented?
So the frappe was invented by a bartender named Cayetano Ferrer, who is from Spain, and he lived here in New Orleans, and he worked at the New Orleans Opera House. Hmm. And then he was, the owner of the New Orleans Opera House was also the owner of Old Absinthe House. So he transferred to Old Absinthe House. He eventually became owner of Old Absinthe House, and he invented this cocktail because he saw how many French people had their loyalties to France and everything that was happening back in France, they wanted to emulate here in New Orleans, and that included absinthe. So he thought, okay, so what is a good, you know, cocktail I can make to play to that love of people's absinthe? Mm-hmm. So not only did he have the typical absinthe that is louched with the ice water and all that, we'll go into that in a few minutes, mm-hmm. but he created the absinthe frappe, which is made with simple syrup, absinthe, crushed ice, and some mint. And you shake it up, and it's a really icy, cold drink. And you can imagine in the late 19th century when it's really, really hot and there's no air conditioning, having a nice cold drink, which
sure.
was even rare then,
right.
was preferred. So
right.
it became a big hit. It was a popular cocktail to drink in the morning.
Mm, really?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I guess I could see that on a hot morning.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of alluded to it. Tell us, you know, one of the unique things about absinthe is the way that it is poured, I guess, for lack of a better mm-hmm. word. It's not just poured straight out of a bottle, typically.
Sure.
So can you explain a little bit about how that process works?
Sure. So you typically pour about a shot's worth of absinthe, about an ounce of absinthe, into, you can use any glass, but mm-hmm. if you're an absinthe connoisseur, you might use a flared glass. And you louche it, which is the term for a cloudy effect, with ice water. So you slowly drip or pour ice water into the absinthe, which creates this louching effect. Now, a lot of people use these big ornate fountains mm-hmm. that can drip water into the absinthe, but you don't need that. You just need ice water, slowly pour it into the absinthe, and it louches it. Other people prefer to add sugar to it with the absinthe spoon. You put the sugar on top of the absinthe spoon on the glass and then drip the ice water through the sugar. But typically nowadays, that's not necessary for good absinthe because good absinthe is pure and it doesn't have any additives in it. So you're not getting any taste that you're not supposed to be getting.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar was typically used in the late 19th and early 20th century to smooth out absinthe that had these extra things added to it.
Okay.
And they needed to add that to make it a little more palatable.
Mm.
But the absinthe today really doesn't need that. If it's good, if it's genuine good absinthe.
Okay. And we'll get into that in a minute when we talk about the history. But when you said that and you were talking about the fancier way to serve absinthe, the sort of historical way, I did want to mention we're here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. They were nice enough to let us record here in their podcast studio. They have a whole absinthe setup, a subset of the museum devoted specifically to absinthe where you can see the tools that you're talking about, right?
Yes. The Gallery Absinthe is right here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. It's a collection that has been curated by Ray Bordelon and Liz Williams. Liz Williams, who is the founder of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And Ray Bordelon is an absinthe expert and a local absinthe expert. And when I was researching this book, everybody was telling me, you have to talk to Ray, you have to talk to Ray. And he has amassed over the course of about 30 years, this incredible collection of spoons and glasses and vintage bottles and everything. And you can see it right here at the museum. It really is a treasure trove of absinthe treasures. And it's the only museum of its kind in the United States.
It's really neat. I mean, Southern Food and Beverage in and of itself is a really unique museum, but that setup is really neat because it's like you're stepping into a bar room.
Absolutely.
of the period, mm-hmm. with all of these unique pieces in there. You can really get a great sense of it. It's also right next to the American Cocktail Museum, which is another subset, yes. of this museum. And so you can, in addition to all the other things you can see here, those two things side by side are really pretty clever. Particularly if you have an affection for alcoholic spirits and the history of them.
The Southern Food and Beverage Museum really is a collection of just amazing treasures to do with not only Southern food, but New Orleans food.
Mm-hmm.
And things that, you know, you don't even really think about as being connected to New Orleans. You learn so much. Every time I come here, I just learn so much.
Yeah, they're always having new pieces added to, mm-hmm. it. They have a whole, we've actually done a program with Liz Williams. I'll have to put a link in the show notes because I don't remember the number. That was entirely about the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. It was several years ago, but it continues to grow and change. And there's always, in fact, walking in to get back to the podcast studio, I saw a big McKenzie sign.
Yes.
From the McKenzie's Bakery in the front. Probably a lot of people listening know that Popeye's Fried Chicken was created here in New Orleans by Al Copeland. And there's a whole exhibit dedicated to Copeland and Popeye's Fried Chicken. But I digress. Let's get back to absinthe. You mentioned the need in the past for a way to sort of, I'll call it, unadulterate the liquid. That kind of gets into the history a little bit of absinthe. Can you talk a little bit about that and some of the challenges and why people were concerned about absinthe, the beliefs that they had about it?
Sure. The interesting thing about absinthe is when absinthe first became part of the mainstream, it was kind of seen as this thing that the lower class drank. And the upper class actually looked down on people who drank absinthe. And so if someone was drinking absinthe, they were kind of seen as a little less than. But then this thing happened called the Great French Wine Blight, which destroyed French wine fields. It was an aphid, mm-hmm. that destroyed French wine fields. So as a result, the price of wine increased, mm-hmm. and absinthe was suddenly affordable. So everybody wanted to drink absinthe. I won't say instead of wine. People were still drinking wine.
Sure.
You know, the winemakers will have you believe that everybody was drinking absinthe instead of wine, but people were still drinking wine. But absinthe was cheaper, so the higher class started drinking absinthe. And of course, they developed all these tastes for absinthe and all of that. But over time, like anything, controversy got, mm-hmm. stirred up. And that's due in part to the winemakers who really saw absinthe cutting into their wine sales. Mm. So not only did they put out the narrative that they pushed the temperance movement, which, mm-hmm. was they wanted people to not drink liquor. They didn't consider wine a liquor because it's fermented and not distilled.
Sure.
Winemakers argued that it's distilled liquor that leads to alcoholism. So they pushed this movement. And then a doctor by the name of Magnin did experiments on animals in which he injected thujone, which is the chemical found in wormwood, into animals. Now, he injected this thujone in large amounts into these animals, mm-hmm. which caused them to seize and die. He used this as an argument that thujone was dangerous. So this narrative was pushed. So not only now is it leading to alcoholism, but it's going to make you crazy. It can make you, you know, hallucinate, do all these crazy things. And the turning point was a man named Jean Lanfray, who, in addition to an absinthe, woke up one morning, drank wine, brandy, all of these different liquors, came home from work and killed his entire family. And the only thing that was really mentioned at trial is that he had drank absinthe that day. So that's what that really pushed. And they said, well, that's it. That caused him to snap. It caused him to go crazy and kill his family. And so from there, the ban on absinthe progressed rather quickly. And it was banned in France and Switzerland and the United States.
And it was banned from the early 1900s in the United States until fairly recently, right?
Yes, it was banned in the United States in 1912, which the interesting thing is in the United States, absinthe was not really a big thing. But here in New Orleans, it was, because New Orleans was the epicenter of absinthe in the late 19th and early 20th century. But everywhere else, it really didn't take off the way it did here. But it was banned in 1912. And, you know, when I say banned, there were restrictions on it. In other words, it couldn't be produced in the United States. But once the internet came around, if you ordered absinthe online and had it shipped to you from another country and had it shipped to the United States, it wasn't, you know, you weren't going to get in trouble for that. But it wasn't until 2007 that absinthe could be legally manufactured and sold in the United States.
And you talk about in your book, in the absence of absinthe, Herb Saint was sort of a popular alternative to it as well, right?
Yes. Herb Saint was invented by a New Orleanian, of course. Again, another connection to New Orleans, who it's basically absinthe without wormwood in it. And so right after Prohibition, they started marketing Herb Saint as an absinthe substitute. So you could have that anise taste without the, quote, sin of wormwood.
Got it. And one of the things you do mention in your book are several places, and we'll get into them later where you can get them. But today you can find the drink made with either or, right?
Yes. You can find, there are Herb Saint frappes. Any drink, any cocktail that has absinthe in it, you can get Herb Saint. I feel like a lot of cocktails, like the Sazerac, I feel it calls for absinthe.
Okay.
Because it's only a rinse of the glass, so I feel like. But I think a lot of bars and restaurants use Herb Saint in replacement of absinthe is a cost-saving measure, because absinthe is a little bit more expensive.
Okay.
So I think they want to save their customers a few dollars, and they figure, well, it's a close enough taste, so what's the difference? But I think at your finer places, if you request something made, if you see it says Herb Saint on the menu, if you ask them to make it with absinthe, I think they would accommodate
it. It struck me as reading it, it's a little like getting an old-fashioned with bourbon versus rye.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Near the end, I want to kind of highlight a couple of places, because you mentioned some fabulous bars in your book where you can get variations of the frappe. Mm-hmm. One thing I did want to ask you about is what the history of the, and I'm going to mispronounce this because I'm not good with French, but the Pernod factory.
Yes. The Pernod factory was they started the whole absinthe movement. They were the big manufacturers of absinthe in France. It started very briefly. The family was in Switzerland. They moved over the border to France, and it became this center of absinthe manufacture, and they manufactured most of the absinthe at the time. There were other factories, as I mentioned earlier, that were kind of cutting corners when they were making their absinthe and adding things like sulfates and things like that to it that altered the taste, which is why a lot of people at the time took it with sugar to smooth out the taste.
Sure.
But Pernod was the epitome of the good absinthe in that time.
Are they still in business?
Yes.
So you can still get, or today you can get absinthe made by Pernod?
Yes, you can. Yes.
You talked a little bit in passing. Let's talk just somewhat about absinthe in the art, because there's some quite famous artists that sort of have a history with absinthe.
Yes.
Through their work. So can you share just a little bit of that?
So Manet is a famous Degas with his, he has a connection to New Orleans.
Again.
But of course, the most famous absinthe drinker of the painters is Van Gogh, who, you know, the reason he cut off his ear was not because of absinthe. He had many other issues, but he was a big absinthe drinker, and he painted glasses of absinthe and absinthe bar rooms, and he was very greatly influenced by it. And poor man, he had a lot of struggles. But Oscar Wilde was a writer who was influenced by absinthe, and Paul Verlaine and Arthur Rimbaud, who were scandalous lovers at the time, they both drank absinthe. And I go into the details of their relationship in the book, and it's crazy.
It's salacious, to
say
the least.
It is very, very, very so.
Yeah, and I don't want to give it all away, because I do want people to read the book. But I was surprised. I knew certainly of Van Gogh, but I was surprised by some of the others and then some of the stories that you tell there. And some of that kind of led to or helped the winemaker's cause of saying, look, these people are crazy and you shouldn't drink this product. And
absolutely.
I also thought it was interesting that the threat was really sort of promulgated, as you mentioned, by the wine industry. They had a vested interest in not having people drink.
Oh, of course they did.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I just always assumed it was the I had sort of bought into the myth of, well, it was the wormwood, and you dispel that, as you mentioned, but in the book, you go into that in more detail. Can you talk a little bit about the old Absinthe House here in New Orleans?
Yes, the old Absinthe House is a historic building, and it's still there. You can go see it. It's very different than it was in the late 19th, early 20th century. But the old Absinthe House was the center of absinthe consumption in New Orleans. You know, absinthe was consumed in many bars, but old Absinthe House is really what put it on the map and is most associated with absinthe drinking today. And you can go there and have absinthe. Just, you know, when you order it, tell them to please don't set it on fire, which is what they do. And I don't fault them. They do that for tourist effects and stuff like that.
Sure.
But proper absinthe preparation does not include fire of any sort.
And I was surprised to read that in your book, that that really sort of takes away from the taste of the spirit.
And it does. And it was only started in the 90s, which is was interesting to me because I was familiar with that form of preparation, but I didn't know that it was just like, no, that totally takes away from it, you know.
Right, right. That's really interesting. So the bottom line is that there are no medical effects other than drinking to excess of any alcohol, but
exactly. It's just an alcohol like any other alcohol. When it was first invented, it was used as a medicinal purposes for stomach ailments.
Hmm.
So it could be maybe if you have an unsafe stomach and you have a glass of absinthe, it might help you. I can't attest to that. But no, other than that, unless you just drink a lot, you'll get drunk. That's about it. Unfortunately,
right.
you won't see any dancing fairies or anything of that nature.
Right, right, right. And, you know, I guess we should also say it is a quite distinctive green. It has a quite distinctive color to it. So if you just see absinthe poured into a glass, it is distinctive. And that's sort of where you get the green fairies from.
Absolutely. And also the green fairy comes from when you louche it. There's swirls and things
sure,
of that
it's
nature when the oils are released. And so it's a very pretty effect. And it looks a little bit like a fairy dancing in the
Got
glass.
Got it. What surprised you in doing the research for the book?
The interesting thing is when I first told people that I was researching this book, people said, oh, well, the absinthe we drink today isn't the same they drank all those years ago. It was banned. And, so many people didn't know that the ban had been lifted.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that the absinthe that was available today is the same as it has all the same ingredients. But what was most interesting to me was the discovery of jade liqueurs by Ted Bro. Theodore Bro, who was a New Orleanian and who helped lift the ban. He was basically one of the ones responsible for lifting the restrictions on absinthe in the United States. His Lucid Absinthe Superior was the first absinthe that was sold legally in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And his jade liqueurs are made with the same herbs that were grown in France at the time of the 19th century when absinthe was being made then. So he's using the same herbs in the same place. So his absinthe is really the best absinthe you can get. It's the closest you can get to the original absinthe.
So it's almost like an heirloom.
Sure, yes. And so discovering all that and that connection to New Orleans and Ted being a New Orleanian, I thought that was really interesting. I kept coming across all of these connections to New Orleans. Like, it kept linking to New Orleans. Like, even herb stain. It's like, wow, like all these little pieces like linked to the city. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. And of course, we have a great restaurant in the city called Herb Saint. One of the things, so in the back of the book, you give very straightforward examples of how to make your own frappe at home.
Yes.
But you hit some of the best bars in the city in terms of just best bars in the city, but also places that happen to make a good frappe or a variation of it. Can you talk about maybe a couple of those that you would suggest somebody go to enjoy the drink?
Yes. My first suggestion would be Peychaud's in the French Quarter, which is a lovely little courtyard bar.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Cure is another one uptown by the same owner, Neil.
Yeah.
Jewel of the South serves, and they serve, I should mention, Cure and Peychaud's serve the absinthe frappe in the traditional style with the crushed ice and in a glass made very traditionally. Jewel of the South has a very good one that is served straight up. It was interesting to me how many bars have different variations of their version. Mr. B's adds an egg white to theirs to make it a little frothy, and they serve it in a martini glass, which I thought was very interesting. And another favorite, Pirate's Alley Cafe, they serve it in the traditional way with the crushed ice. And yeah, so there are a lot of places where you can duck in and try a frappe for yourself.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I'm a big fan of Neil Bodenheimer. We've had him on the show to talk about Tales of the Cocktail. And so Cure is the one place where I have had it, and I thought it was delicious. You know, all their drinks are well curated and great bar staff there. But yeah, so how long has the book been out?
The book's been out since April of
this year. So April of 2023.
Yes.
Right? It's a great read. You do get into the history not only of the drink itself, but again, some of the stories with the artists. Again, kind of salacious, really surprising, but also you dispel a lot of the myths, some of which you've talked about here today. Is there anything else you would add that you think people ought to know about absinthe the drink?
The only thing I would suggest is if you've never tried absinthe before, I would suggest trying it in a cocktail, not even necessarily a frappe, but maybe a Sazerac, something that has a little hint of absinthe, but has some other ingredients that you might like. I have some cocktail recipes in my book if you're interested in trying some of your own. But I would suggest a Sazerac made with absinthe as a starter drink, because that kind of just eases you into it. It has
a little bit
of a rinse to it, but it's not overwhelming. Mm. If you've never had absinthe before, I don't know if I would suggest diving right into just the straight absinthe, you know,
right,
with the water and everything. But if you have a savory type, I think it's more of a savory taste.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a savory type of palate, you know, if you want to give it a try, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but try it maybe at a bar first before you go and buy
a bottle
of it.
Yeah. Plus, there's some great bars, as you mentioned. Those bars are all top-notch bars to go to anyway for a lovely drink. So it makes sense. Well, again, the book is called The Absinthe Frappe. It's available in local New Orleans bookstores and, of course, online. We'll put links to some of the local bookshops that carry it so that if you want to support a local bookstore, you can do that. Thanks, Marielle, for joining me today.
Thank you, Mark. I had a great time.
Thanks also to Liz Williams and the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for hosting us. If you got something out of this episode, please consider becoming a patron, or you can leave a tip via Venmo or PayPal. I'm at Beyond Bourbon ST on both. And with that, I'll turn it over to my girls to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.